What does it really take to start, grow, and run a business? Join us each week as we talk to people who've had an idea and are seeing it through to success. Every week, a new story on the Common Sense Marketer on Marketing Copilot Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Common Sense Marketer on Marketing Copilot Radio. I'm your host, Marie Weiss, and today it's my pleasure to have our special guest, Tedde van Gelderen from Akendi. Tedde is the president of Akendi, which is a user experience design company. I asked Tedde earlier to describe in his own words, what does Akendi do? And he's gonna share that with everybody today. But the thing I really like is he helps people make their products and services better as for the user. And I love that because Tedde and I have had conversations in the past about the importance of the buyer journey, but more importantly, the importance of the user journey and the user experience. And so we're going to talk about that today as we frame that as far as what Akendi does and get into a little bit of how that is important online today and what that means to people and why it's more important than ever online than it's ever been. So welcome, Tedde.
Yeah, thank you.
So take a few minutes and just share with our listeners how Akendi started, why you started this company, a bit about your background. I'd love to hear the story.
Yeah, so let's maybe we'll start with what Akendi does. The like you already mentioned, we're really helping companies build their products and services to make them simpler, easier, more seamless. Some of those words, but mostly to get the interaction and the connection that people have with the products and services the best way possible. So you end up with the best experience, and you feel more connected with the thing that the company does. As opposed to the kind of the marketing aspect of it. We focus really on the products themselves and the services that companies provide. And it comes for me from a real interest in the difficulty that technology and content and the things around us in our world bring to us, because it's my background is in psychology, cognitive psychology, and I've always been intrigued by how people react and interact with things around them. Why is something easy to use? Why is information make sense? Why is it something that people want to interact with more and again and again? Why is that? And that really triggered for me when I went to university my interest in this space, and I was always baffled by why would even something simple as a door handle, which is round in North America and most of the time is a handle in the Netherlands where I come from, why is that designed in the first place? But why is that sometimes an issue for people that are not used to that? And that's that has intrigued me and made me want to go into this field and ultimately end up with Akendi.
So tell me a little bit about, just give me an example, like share with us an example of how this would work in the real world. Give us an example of the door handle one is a fantastic one. Give us another example of how you would take something that seems cumbersome and clunky and turn it into something more useful.
Well, a very straightforward example is really around a lot of the digital products that are out there nowadays that have evolved from being kind of brochures or shingles online to become real business tools for companies to not only have there as a presence but also help to show and deliver some of the value that they have in products and services that they offer. And if you can't find something online, and that's what we all encounter every now and then, and certainly it's not always solved by Google, but if we can't find something online, it really stops us in our tracks. We can't continue. We can't fulfill what we need, the information need we have, the functionality need we have. And we try to make sure that the websites that we produce and that we create and that designed are are then working according to how people think. And that's really the core of this approach, is that you're trying to make sure that the design is working in the hands of end users. Well, how do you do that? Well, by involving them in the design, in during the design. So we involve end users and listen to end users as we're designing new websites, where, for example, CRA, so the Canada Revenue Agency, when they design their content, and they have a lot of it because there's a lot of tax information out there, they have to make sure they use the language and the terms that their audience would understand. But a very straightforward example there where it goes wrong is that if you have an older person, somebody who's, say, 70 years old, and they are still running their own consultancy because they've been very successful and they have a lot of knowledge still to offer, and they're still being hired by companies, and they're looking for certain information that pertains to them, what has happened in the past is that somebody of 17 years old is seen as a senior. So there's a category senior, and say all tax information that pertains to the senior is located there. But for them, when you ask them and when you involve them in a design and you ask them about, so find information for you, they see themselves as an entrepreneur or as a freelancer or as a one person business. So they look for the business section. And they don't see themselves, yeah, but you're 70, you're supposed to be a senior. So I'm looking for information there.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen. So it's a simple thing like a label that can put people on the wrong foot, and they don't know where to go anymore. And then the whole thinking around, so we put, because we love to do that, we put people and audiences into buckets, and we give them a label, and we think, well, you're always this in every situation. But it's not as simple as that.
I love that example. I don't think there's a person out there who hasn't been frustrated by a government website or specifically a website for tax information. I'm sure we can all relate as consumers and as business people that we land on websites and we get frustrated by the experience because something isn't sorted correctly, the labels aren't correct. You don't necessarily know where to click next. You don't necessarily know what information you're looking for. In the case of the government, they can sort of, to a certain extent, get away with it because, you know, it's the mint. But mm-hmm. for profit-seeking businesses today, it just isn't a good strategy anymore. And I'm sure you would agree that there's lots of websites or even online products that you go to use or you go to look at, and you kind of stop short because something doesn't make sense. Something, to your point, isn't labeled correctly. Mm-hmm. So this idea of getting people involved in the process, getting people involved as you're designing something, this seems like common sense to me. This seems like a no-brainer for people. But you and I in the past have had conversations about why so many companies find this difficult, don't go about it the right way. What's your thinking on why so many companies stumble on this issue today? And we've all been on bad websites, ones that don't work, that make no sense. Why do you think this is happening? What's going on out there that makes this happen?
Yeah, it's a fascinating phenomenon, I find. I think one reason why people don't do this is that we've been sort of taught and trained from a very young age to learn certain skills ourselves. So we're learned to ride a bicycle. We're taught to ride a bicycle. We're taught to learn to read, to write, to learn math, and it's always been focused on us as a person. We've always been developing skills and knowledge around us and who we are, and that carries forward to high school, to college, to university, where we are learned and taught a trade, and so we are an expert in our field. And so when we enter the workforce, we start to think the same way. We think, well, I'm here to design a website, so I'm really good at my job. I know how to do this. I think I know how to do this, and I think really hard. I'm really smart. And when I build, when I design, when I create, I know I'm going to figure this out. They see it as, and even many designers see themselves as problem solvers. And they are. They problem solve a lot of things. The problem with that approach is that you're not designing it for yourself. So, and with that simple statement, you get into a whole new area and a whole new domain that where you have to recognize and acknowledge that, well, if I'm not designing for myself, it means that somebody else may respond and react differently to the same information that they see on the screen or in any other thing that they have. It could be hardware, software, anything. And with that fact in mind, you have to change your approach. You have to say, so it's not me and my expertise that's going to save the day. I have to make sure I follow the right steps to get knowledge that I clearly don't have because I don't build for myself, I'll build for others, into the process that I'm following as a designer. And that's what we do, why we involve people and users into the design process, to acknowledge the saying, sorry, I don't really know the answer always. Why? Not because I'm not smart. It's because I cannot think and reason in the same way as somebody else. And therefore, I need to involve that somebody else in my process as I'm figuring this out to take into account not only what I think, but also what the other person thinks. And that's and so when you take that simple concept, because it is simple, and you start to extrapolate it to bigger projects and bigger initiatives, it becomes a thing. It becomes a process and a number of steps you have to follow where you consciously involve the user, not necessarily to just blindly listen to what they say, because that's sometimes people take it too literal and say, let's just ask the user what they want, write it up, and then design and build for that. That's not what I mean. I mean to really listen how they think, how they reason, how they react, and then take that knowledge into your design, mix it in with your own expertise and your own knowledge, and make sure that you cover all the bases. And that's really what this is doing, is that it's helping elevate the design. So by the time it gets launched and by the time it's in market, it really becomes a lot better fit for many more people. And it's never ideal. That's the other thing too. People think sometimes you need to have the ideal best design that is the easiest to use or the seamless or the best information. No, it's better. It's better than what you're doing today. And it's better for a business to take this approach because you will get to a good release, a good product faster and by involving these people already before you launch.
So if I go back to the beginning of what you were saying, which I think is really interesting, we've come through a bit of an era of what I'll call the DIY, the do-it-yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're saying is that people believe that building websites is easy. It's just, well, I can write a brochure, I can build a website. But when it comes to website, there's so many more moving parts to it of interaction and eye tracking and labels and wording that it's really important to not use your opinion to build a website, but to use experience and information from users to make the right website. And I think what you're really describing, if I can paraphrase a little bit, is it's the art of understanding this, because I think we've all used this expression. It's a little bit overused, but you know, Henry Ford saying, if I'd asked customers what they want, I would have built a faster horse. It's really taking mm-hmm. what they're saying and extrapolating that and figuring out then the best way to present information back, the best way to present a web page back. And there's a real art behind that. And some people think, I can just do this myself. I know how to figure this out. And they let people, you know, sort of design in a vacuum, so to speak. And it's design in a bubble without bringing the user experience into it. And do you think people are a little bit nervous today? I mean, you and I shared another example a while ago. I think you expressed your frustration using a transit system signage at one point and said, you know, I don't understand why, or maybe it was a blog post you wrote. I apologize. It might've been a blog post you wrote that I really enjoyed. And it was about, you know, why don't they take the time to really walk it through, even starting from beginning to end of an experience of navigating through a transit system and really experiencing what an end user experience is the work you're doing with websites a little bit like that, walking it through from beginning to end and seeing it from the eyes of the customer and the user and seeing it from the perspective of the person who has to use the tool?
Yeah, definitely. And And it's about getting that user involved in it. So what I mean by that, I'm not just thinking like the user or thinking like the customer. I am talking to the customer. Because one of the things that is missing, and when you take transit or take any of those devices, and I'm talking about websites, but it's software, it's hardware, it's spaces, it really applies to many different domains that all have an interaction with the human. It's really that generic sometimes. When you look at it, how they approach it is, first of all, you asked earlier, so why people are potentially uncomfortable with that. Partly it's because of it's not their domain per se. So I have a psychology background, so I'm used to thinking and working with people. That's not always everybody's forte. They don't always want to work with people because it's simply more convenient or more comfortable to stay within your own expertise and try to solve it with, well, I got my toolbox. I know how to use a hammer. So I'm going to apply the hammer to every single problem that I see. And that's what you, so that's one reason. The other reason is that there's a huge sort of perceived wall that is literally built around many office buildings. Why? Because people are not necessarily able or see themselves. I have a place of work, so that office is the place where I do the work. I would never go outside that office to collect data, to understand, to see what people are doing in real life when it really happens and take that information back into the office to design better. So we have this real kind of drive to stay within the office, and we rather talk to each other more often than stop talking to each other but talk to the end user.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of dynamic that you see very often.
And I think you would agree that this issue has just become more and more problematic in the complex world of digital and the online space. It's added this whole new level of complexity to user interaction because now, in some situations, we're forced to get outside the office, so to speak, by this thing called social media or comments on posts or being able to connect directly with somebody at a company. Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, users and buyers to a certain extent have a lot of control, and they're quite happy to give us feedback in different formats and mediums. And I think it's just a matter in what separates, you know, good companies from great companies is our ability to absorb that information and mm-hmm. use it in a useful way. So do you find that that's another layer of complexity in this problem that you're solving in the world today, that you know, there's companies that are good at kind of taking that all in and companies that aren't?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think it comes back to the culture of the company. If the senior management is open to this kind of thing, they say, well, calm down, be open to new inputs, learn, fail, and learn, and keep doing that in an iterative way. That is a big step for a lot of companies to go through as an approach to building products and services. And a lot of companies are so, I wouldn't say traditional, I think they're just comfortable in the way they've done it always. And they still see software as a magic thing, or they still see the web as a magic thing that they grew up in and they may even became very successful in. And yeah. So the methods that they used to use are comfortable. So we keep doing it again and again. And they don't realize necessarily that the world has moved on. The techniques that used to work fairly well don't work well enough anymore. The competition is bigger. Everything is elevated. So yeah, we need to be more sophisticated in the tools and techniques we use and the way we design to keep up with everybody else, because it doesn't cut it anymore to just do it in a traditional way.
Now, is there anybody, you know, that comes to mind in your mind that you think is doing a really great job of user experience, really puts a lot of time and effort into getting this right?
There are actually quite a few companies that get this right and getting it righter. I'll actually take an example that might not be obvious, but it's I actually find the government and the Canadian government in this case is really, really moving in this area. I find given where most people who have some experience or knowledge in how government works, given that the way they've done things always, and they've deep steeped in tradition, they've been in the last decade, I would say, been very, very well on the way to getting these kind of things more organized and more implemented. I wouldn't say that they're anywhere near perfection yet, but I'm very encouraged by the way they're doing it now versus 10 years ago, where I came to Canada 17 years ago, and so I've seen the progression go. And it's very encouraging to see a lot more going on, a lot more people, to the point where, and I think government is definitely a good example where you see that happen, is that a lot more companies are building their in-house teams of not just having the builders, the coders, and the manufacturers, but you also now get designers and researchers become part of the in-house team, which is a really encouraging sign. To see the maturity grow, because ultimately that's the real proof that something has become mainstream and seen as a necessity in business and in organizations, is that you hire people on staff to do this kind of work that we're doing, not just as an add-on that you keep outsourcing.
Yeah, very good. Very nice. And so just on that point about you coming to Canada 17 years ago, do you think there's a big difference between way other countries approaches this in the way North America? Do you see a different sensibility in Europe around this topic, or do you think everybody sort of struggles in the same way with the same problems?
I make a distinction between even the US and Europe and Canada. In Europe, definitely, when I came here, there was more awareness in Europe around these kind of processes to involve the user, and to was more maturity in that sense. The more companies were having their teams and having better processes. I think it has improved in Canada, but they're still lagging, to be honest. And I do make the comparison nowadays more often to the US, where there's a lot more companies like us there. They're big, and a lot of companies see this as a differentiator. Say, if we can make the experience better, if we can integrate the user better, and by doing that we make the experience better, that's a clear win. There's a business sense that is in the US that I don't always find still in Canada, where people go, well, this is good enough, or no, we'll just figure it out ourselves. We don't, just the really big projects we may involve you in, but not on the day-to-day things. So you still get a fair amount of excuses that when we work with U.S. companies, we don't see as much, and we see a lot more, of course we need to do this. This is a no-brainer. This is going to get us more business, more outreach. We're going to meet our mandate better. We need to do this.
Yeah, very nice. So, Teta, if I could be so bold, if I could ask you for three pieces of advice, so three things that you would recommend to anybody today building a product or service for a consumer today, and let's, you know, focus more on the online world for right now. What are the three pieces of advice that you would give them?
Well, the first one I already gave, I think, in a longer answer, is to get out of the office. Really, there's no substitute for looking and talking and just learning about how do your customers and users interact with your products, with your services? How do they see them? How do they experience them? It's such a simple question, and I'm still baffled by why don't we know this? If I go to a product manager, product owner, so go outside, go meet some people, and not just one person who's selling, not just one person, even the project manager, product owner, but the whole team. Some of the engineers, some of the designers, some of the content people, everybody that will interact with some of the parts of the experience needs to have some more data and information to build their decisions on design on, not just their assumptions, what they have. That's one. Second, really realize that when you create experiences, when you create a design, when you create things for other people, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to try again. And don't be afraid don't give yourself 2 days to figure this out. Give yourself more time and make sure that once you are launching, it's good. But so build in that, like, nobody expects you to build code the right way the first time. And nobody expects you to write content the right way the first time. The same with the overall experience is you have to give yourself time to fail, to learn, and to do it again, and then get that right. And then lastly, it's it's really give yourself a little bit of time when we are so gung-ho on some content and product idea. Give yourself a little bit of time to really make that sink in. And what I mean by that is that once you have a good idea, don't run to the end right away. Don't start to create screens right away, day two, because you have such a your gut says, well, this is a great idea. We have to do this. No, step back. Try to put yourself in the shoes of the user. And yes, that's not what I just said earlier, but try to do that initially with your team and to say, let's walk us through the whole experience. Let's pretend that we have a day in the life of that product and that service with the user, with the customer, and let's play that out. So very early on, without investing any time in design and in building, we're going to give ourselves the opportunity to really get that feeling of what the experience is like. Because that at that point, you do a lot of learning already where you're going to kill bad ideas, which is the whole point of this. Because this, right. You don't do the research for the fun of it. You do the research because you want to de-risk the design. You want to make sure that the design actually works. And there's no cheaper way than just acting it out yourself. And you do that in service design. You do that in product design. Take your half day and act it out. And make sure that you're still on board with it after that half day and you think it stays a good idea.
So don't fall in love at first sight is what you're saying.
No, absolutely not.
Well, listen, thank you so much. Those are all great points. And I think for anybody today who is building a website, building a product, building a service, especially if there's an online component to it, I think that is very sound advice. And I encourage you to check out a little bit more of the work that Akendi does. Check out their blogs. As always, in the show notes today, we'll have Teta's bio. We'll have a place where you can connect with him. And we're going to put in, as part of the show notes, that blog post that I mentioned that Teta wrote about, in this case, a failed user experience and how with a little bit of thinking and thoughtfulness, it could have been a much better experience. And I think it was a great example that we're talking about today. Thank you so much, Teta, for sharing. I think you're an expert in your field. You're one of the foremost researchers on this topic that I know. So I do really appreciate you coming on today and sharing your insights with people.
You're welcome.
And as I mentioned in the show notes, there'll be lots of places to connect. And if you're really interested in the topic of customer journey and buyer experience, I do encourage you to check out You Can't Be Everywhere, A Common Sense Approach to Digital Marketing for Any Business, a book available on our website. First chapter is available for free. It's available on Amazon.com. And this has been another episode of The Common Sense Marketer on Marketing Copilot Radio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to The Common Sense Marketer on Marketing Copilot Radio. If you'd like to connect with any of our guests, you'll find their contact details listed in the show notes on our website at marketingcopilot.com. And if you really want to learn more, check out the book, You Can't Be Everywhere, A Common Sense Approach to Digital Marketing for Any Business, which can be found on Amazon.com just by Googling Marie Weiss. See you next week.